Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Friday, to get you through another crazy, wild, maddening day of news that we're going to figure out together on the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo, Google Home. Got a lot to get to. China is escalating conflict with the United States at about 60,000 feet. That is what's trending.
What's trending? China is responsible.
They very clearly are responsible. The question is, what exactly are they doing? Although it feels like we do have an answer to what they're doing. They say a weather balloon blew off course. Oops. Totally unintentional. It's not military, though. It's civilian. We promise. We are honest about everything. In fact, just look at how we handled all the COVID data and how we handled tracking down the origin of COVID. Have we not proven that we are honest? Have we not proven that we are allies with you? Oh, just kidding. We're totally responsible. Yeah, they're clearly responsible. They intentionally dropped a spy craft of some kind over this country. And the implications of this cannot be overstated. Not even a little bit. Now, the spokesperson for the Pentagon, his name is Patrick Ryder. He didn't really provide much detail today to the public.
Phil, right now, what we're not going to do is get into a hour-by-hour location of the balloon. Again, we're monitoring it closely.
Are you?
As I mentioned, right now, it's over the center of the continental United States. That's about as specific as I'm going to get.
But I understand my being inconvenient, but does the public not have a right to know if the balloon is over
the public certainly
their state?
Has the ability to look up in the sky and see where the balloon is.
Gee, thanks. I don't, though, from where I am, and I'm kind of curious whether or not it's coming to Washington. So it seems like an appropriate question and a reasonable one to answer. If anyone can just look up, if it happens to be in their general area, why would you consider this to be classified information? Why not just give us an update? Why not tell us where we think it's going to go? And how about this? Can you tell us if this has happened before?
So what I would tell you right now is that information is classified. I'm not able to provide it other than I can confirm that there have been other incidents where balloons did come close to or cross over U.S. territory.
Now, a senior defense official speaking to Fox News said that this balloon was launched from mainland China. The Pentagon doesn't believe that this was a weather balloon that flew off course. Duh. They don't think that there was force majeure, which is what the Chinese government said, that caused this balloon, which is very clearly a surveillance balloon, to enter our airspace. The senior U.S. official said this was intentional. Now, it was spotted yesterday over Montana. There is a reasonable concern, about how long we've either known about it or, more importantly, why did it take so long for us to know about it? This was spotted by a civilian. Brian Suits was playing the audio earlier this morning of the guy who found it. So did we not know that this was happening? Did we have no idea that this was above us until some civilian said so? Former FBI Special Agent Jonathan Gilliam was on Fox News.
And it really makes you question, what is NORAD, the CIA, the NSA, all these people that we believe are able to look and see these things, Space Command, this brand new Space Command, why couldn't they have caught this? Because this is a national security blunder. It's not the first time, admittedly, that they're saying that this has happened. So how does it happen again? That's the question that needs to be asked right now.
Now, out of fairness, it is possible that they did know that this was happening. There is a question as to why this has not been blown out of the sky. We've heard some folks on the right and some folks on the left ask that question. Now, the Biden administration has come out and said basically the reason why we're not doing that is because this could cause some significant safety issues on the ground in Montana. It's not that you just shoot this thing and then it just falls down straight. And we're like, oh, let's shoot it down when it's around a river of some kind. It's not quite how it would work, because depending on the weight of this particular object, it could create a pretty significant radius as a blast zone and could pose a threat. Do I 100% buy that as a reason? No, it's a viable one or a reasonable one in my head, but I don't necessarily think that that's the truth. Brian this morning was speculating, and I think that this is, again, as valid of speculation as anything else, although that, I guess, is a low bar. How should I say this? I hold more water or more weight I give to Brian Suits than just a crackpot on Twitter. Not that much, but I mean, certainly more.
They're pretty comparable, though, right?
Close. I mean, I'll give him a little bit more because he does have some military experience. I never actually fact-checked it. For all I know, he made it all up. He's like Clyde Shavers. No,
Shavers Suit?
No.
That'd be a great show.
He actually is a war hero. Shavers, not Brian. No, I'm kidding, Brian. But he brought up this morning, maybe the reason why they didn't shoot it down is because we're actually getting some information from it that benefit us in our dealings with China. What that information is, I don't know. Maybe it's the technology that's on board and we're able to see exactly what it's getting. And it's giving us a little bit more information as to the motives of China. Is it possible that the reason why we don't want to shoot it down is because we don't want to give up any information from the United States on how we could deal with this in the future? Should it pose a serious and immediate problem? Have we stopped it from being operational so it's not really collecting any information and we're kind of seeing what it ends up? Maybe. There's a whole host of potential reasons why we aren't shooting it down. Viable reasons, reasonable reasons, legitimate reasons. We do know, however, and Gordon Chang made this point on Fox Business today, like whatever the reason is why we're not shooting it down, understand that this has some incredible implications.
And it's very dangerous with what they're doing with, for instance, the intercept of that unarmed U.S. Air Force reconnaissance plane in international airspace in December. So this is just goes one incident after another, and it's not leading in a good direction.
I do think it's reasonable to say it's not a weapon. If it was, we would be handling this much differently. So the consensus does seem to be that this is just a spy balloon or spy drone of some kind. We know that earlier today, Secretary Antony Blinken said he was canceling the scheduled trip over the weekend to Beijing specifically because of this. And I don't know why we would do that. It seems to me that that implies some weakness. Why not go there and be all like, hey, what's, you know, that balloon? We know. You want to explain it? Look me in the eyes and tell me what exactly it is you're doing here. Why you think we're going to fall for this? It seems rather passive aggressive to just cancel the trip, right? Just why not approach the person and tell them, hey, we're on to you. Tell us why, Mr. Foreign Minister. I think that that's reasonable, but they're choosing not to. I do think it shows weakness. And I do think that for a lot of people, not shooting it out of the sky is sending a message of weakness. Whether or not that's fair doesn't matter. That is the perception. Mark Esper, the former defense attorney under Trump, he was on CNN.
It is a brazen act by the Chinese to do this. We were just talking about whether or not it has more or less intelligence value than what they currently have. I don't think we know. And so my interest would be not necessarily shooting it down, but bringing it down so that we can capture the equipment and understand exactly what they're doing. Are they taking pictures? Are they intercepting signals? What are they doing? And what is the level of technical capability? It will tell us a lot about what they're trying to do, what they're trying to learn, and what their capability is of doing that.
Now, I certainly am grateful that, and we don't know that much about Eric Swalwell, but we do know he has a thing for the Chinese. I am grateful that he, as far as we can tell, doesn't suffer from objectophilia, which is a sexual attraction to inanimate objects. Because him looking up and seeing this giant Chinese balloon could be a danger zone around Eric Swalwell.
Yikes.
That was your response?
Well,
did that add anything?
I didn't really know where
you were. No, you leaned in, you were going to say something, and all you did was say yikes.
Well, there's just been a lot of out there comments from you.
What was
week.
The value of the yikes? You couldn't give me a little bit more?
No.
Just an extra syllable, even?
What do you want? Do you want me to extend the S? Yikes.
No, that's just
why would he
creepy.
Be attracted to the balloon? I guess there are people that are into that kind of stuff.
I looked it up, and I hope no one looks up my browser history on our work computer, but I looked up, what is it called when you're sexually attracted to an inanimate object? And what came up was objectophilia, which is not, that's very on the nose.
Well, I figure there's a thing for just balloons specifically, probably, right?
I didn't look that up because I was scared I was going to get into, like, clown pornography.
What is that?
Yeah, I just didn't want to take that risk. That I'd get in trouble
for. Okay. That's where you draw the line.
That's where you draw the line.
Okay.
Well, just because personally, it's just creepy. I don't want to see
that. Do you not like clowns?
First of all, no one likes clowns, especially if you're going to add the pornography element to it, man. Just why can't you just leave me be with what I found? What do I need to dive in even deeper? Do you know the stuff that I'm exposed to on a regular basis just doing this show?
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm saying it's crazy that that's where the line is the clowns.
I'm not saying
all the stuff.
First of all, I didn't say that was the line. It's past the line, but I didn't say that was the line.
Okay. I mean, you were on national TV talking about wieners the other day, so.
That's actually very fair. Push the button. Now.
What's trending? Back the blue.
How curious is this? The data, the study that was being used by Democrats, in particular Monica Dinger, the state senator, data that was being used to claim that the vehicular pursuit ban had no negatives, only positives. It turns out that study is bunk. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And suddenly, that study disappeared. All of a sudden, people were going online looking for that study because they were like, this is questionable. And it had quite a few critics. They went online, and according to the Center Square, it was gone. I know. I'm just as shocked. Bob Scales is a critic of the report. He's going to be on a little bit later today. And he called out this study by Dr. Martina Morris. She is a retired UW professor of stats and sociology. It turns out the data that she was using is deeply flawed. She took it down and then she stealthily updated it or edited it. In fact, I was talking to Matt Markovich in our newsroom. He found the new version, compared it to the old version, and a lot of the stats are a little bit different and some of the framing around it is a little bit different. How curious. How absolutely curious. Now, this study that she put together wasn't peer-reviewed. It's based on an unofficial crowdsource database. The database itself wasn't even designed to track vehicular pursuit fatalities. But she was out there making this claim, something like 73% reduction in police pursuit-related deaths or fatalities. 73%. She said that from 2017 to 2021, there were 13 deaths of passengers and pedestrians that were caused by police pursuits. 13. Wow. But it was only 3. Not 13. It was 3, according to Bob Scales, according to the data that we now have access to, which is dramatically different than 13, which, by the way, 13 is not all that high, because when they tell us about all the deaths that have resulted in vehicular pursuits, I'm assuming most people thought it was like dozens, if not 100. But it turns out to be 3, which shows you that it's not, in fact, dangerous to pursue, or at least that the fatalities are very low because officers are trained. They know when to go ahead and pursue when it's safe, and they know when not to do that. Now, this is data that has been used by Monica Dinger to justify not even giving a hearing to a bill that would rescind the vehicular pursuit bill.
The evidence that the pursuit law is the reason that these things are happening is simply not there.
That's Martina Morris claiming that all of the new crimes that we're seeing, or the rise in crime, the surge in crime, none of it is connected to the vehicular pursuit bill. Oh, did I tell you that she was a member or is a member of an anti-police group? She's part of an advocacy group. Weird how that works, how it just so happens that the data that she pulls falls in line with a preconceived view of cops. Now, Bob Scales is not the only critic. There's another critic by the name of Matthew Hickman. He's a professor over at Seattle University. He's the chair of the Department of Criminal Justice, Criminology, and Forensics. And he said, quote, if this analysis was submitted for peer review, it would be summarily rejected, as it does not satisfy threshold criteria for quantitative scientific work. The analysis should be disregarded in its entirety and should be not used to inform legislative decision making. You know where that came from? You know where we learned about this criticism? From a Democrat, Alicia Rule, state representative. out in Ferndale or Whatcom County. She's someone who is on Monkadinger's political side from a party position, but she, at least on this, is being open and honest, saying, yeah, the data you guys are using is false. You're using false data. Hickman was specifically critical of the sample size that was used. He's quoted as saying, simply tallying the number of fatalities for a limited period prior to and after a law goes into effect will not support a meaningful conclusion about the effectiveness of the legal intervention. Professor Morris has essentially presented an extremely crude version of what is generally referred to as interrupted time series analysis. There are many pitfalls in this type of analysis, and the data requirements are far more stringent than what Professor Morris has presented. The effectiveness of HB 1054, this is the vehicular pursuit bill, is a very complex question to address, and an adequate research design must be able to consider and rule out alternative explanations for observed changes. Now, what I fear this might end up doing is feed into the narrative coming from folks like Monkadinger or State Representative Roger Goodman, who are basically out there saying, well, why don't we just get someone to study all of this? Instead of rescinding the very clearly flawed and dangerous vehicular pursuit ban, they're just going to say, let's just do another study. Let's study it. And while they study, people die. That's the truth. While they study this, people are going to die. And I guarantee you, Jason Tells the Future, February 3rd, 319 and 619, they're going to come out and say, yeah, guess what? We're just going to study. We just don't have the data. We'll study it. That's what they're going to do at the end of this legislative session. It's silly. But, hey, that's Democrats. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send a text. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Foodie edition.
So the agriculture officials for the U.S. government under Biden, they are proposing limits on added sugars in school lunches. And I think most people who are looking at the school lunch situation across the country in public schools, they'll probably say much better than what it used to be, but there's still some room for improvement. And in this case, what they want to do is not only limit added sugars into certain products, but they're also trying to limit sodium, which actually I don't think that that's a smart move. The Associated Press says the first limits on added sugars would be required in the 2025-2026 school year. And it would specifically start with foods like sweetened cereals, yogurts, and flavored milks. Under the plan, they say an 8-ounce container of chocolate milk could contain no more than 10 grams of sugar. Flavored milks now contain about twice that amount. The plan also limits sugary grain desserts, such as muffins or donuts, to no more than twice a week at breakfast. Why are you giving them donuts anyway at all, right?
I don't know what school gives out donuts.
Some of them apparently give out donuts and school muffins.
Don't come after the flavored milks, though. Those are great.
No, they're not. They're
the
disgusting.
Strawberry? Ugh. Oh, those were so good.
God, you have the palate of a 14-year-old. It says, by the fall of 2027, added sugars in school meals would be limited to less than 10% of the total calories per week for breakfast and lunches. Diane Pratt-Hevener, spokesperson for the School Nutrition Association, it's a trade group, she said, okay, do we really need to do this? We are already healthier than we were in the past. And all you're doing is putting a burden on these school lunch programs, particularly in smaller school districts, in rural school districts. She said, quote, school meal programs are at a breaking point. These programs are simply not equipped to meet additional rules. And there's validity to that point. Even making the jump to the current health standards, which by any nutritionist perspective, I'm willing to bet they're all still saying, yeah, this is still not very healthy. And there was this big push during the Obama administration. Michelle Obama was on top of it, pushing better school lunches. No one was eating them because they were so gross and disgusting. So then they made, do you remember that? There was a movement. We had a kid on whose video or whose Twitter photo of his lunch went viral. He came on the show to talk about it. This is the most vile stuff we've ever eaten. No one will eat it. And it's just like this pile of mush.
Yeah, everything looks super whack.
It was
right?
Just so great. And there was no color to it. It was just disgusting. So you've got right now them saying, we've gone away from the Michelle Obama meals. It's a little bit better. It's certainly healthier than what it was in the past. we can't really do much more than this, at least not the way that we're currently structured. Now, if you're going to give a whole bunch of different, you know, federal dollars to this, you can probably make an argument why that's efficient use of tax dollars if we're getting kids to be healthier. So societally, we're not dealing with the costs associated with kids who are getting sick earlier or overweight earlier. Okay, fine. But I don't think you can just snap your fingers and tell them, oh, well, it's a phased-in approach. Just get your act together. It can't be that easy to put this together, especially when you're in a rural area where you just don't have access to the same things you would have access to in a city like a Seattle or an Everett. I don't think that that's necessarily fair. And at some point, you're also going to start to get more of a revolt from the kids. Because if you get too healthy, they're just going to stop eating it and they'll bring their own lunch and it'll be filled with crap. Or they'll go off campus. Are you still allowed to do that in schools, or has that been deemed too scary again?
I was never allowed to have off-campus lunch.
I thought that was a bigger thing now.
It might be.
Maybe it depends on where you live. Go in the Midwest. They're like, yeah, go away. Go walk to McDonald's over there, fatty McFatface. That's the problem. Drink this chocolate milk with 8 grams of sugar. It's healthy now. Chocolate milk is not healthy. Neither is strawberry milk.
I never said it was healthy. When I was a kid, I liked it. But now I'm lactose intolerant and I can't even drink
it. Yeah, that's what happened because you drank it early.
Probably so.
It screwed up your system. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. There's a mother who spoke with King 5. She lost her daughter to a fentanyl overdose. And there are no words that anyone can use to really describe, I imagine, the pain that she is still suffering from. But she is trying to do something, maybe in the name of her daughter, certainly in the name of trying to prevent other families from experiencing what she and her family had to experience. And obviously, it is always going to stick with her what happened.
She loved life. And had she have known that this was a possibility, that this one pill could take her life, she would not have taken that pill. I know that.
Her name is Genevieve Schofield, and I think she is well-intentioned. There's no doubt whatsoever. She is well-intentioned. Her idea is to make fentanyl strips, test strips, more accessible.
You take your substance and you put it in water and then you dip your strip in it.
Now, what it can do is detect whether or not there are even slight traces of fentanyl in the drug. Fentanyl, especially if you don't know you're taking it, you could very easily overdose, very easily. In the state of Washington, and we brought this up a few weeks ago, the state of Washington considers fentanyl test strips to be drug paraphernalia, and thus it is illegal for you to possess. There are only 2 clinics in the entire state that have been given an exemption to be able to carry these fentanyl test strips. One of them is in Seattle, the other one is in the city of Kent, for the entire state. And so there's this new state law, and it will pass, there's no doubt. This law changes that. It basically says it's no longer considered drug paraphernalia, and you can now have it at various health sites, treatment centers all across the state. It's not going to hurt. It's not going to help. It won't hurt, but it definitely won't help. I'm sorry, because I don't want to tell Genevieve that her activism here is not going to do anything to truly help families avoid losing a loved one to fentanyl overdose. But that's the truth, and we have to be honest about this. Giving someone access to fentanyl test strips still means they're getting high on a drug that will ultimately kill them. It just maybe won't kill them via fentanyl. That's all that this does. And it's the same argument with Narcan being just handed out. Because right now, the Tacoma Needle Exchange, obviously in Tacoma, is setting up three Narcan vending machines, the ones we told you about 6 months or so ago. They're putting them around Pierce County. The Tacoma Needle Exchange, there's some irony, I think, in them putting up these Narcan vending machines because they're meant to save people's lives. But the Tacoma Needle Exchange is a group, like so many others, that, again, while I assume are well-intentioned, they're responsible for a ton of overdose deaths. They're responsible because they enable drug users to continue to use drugs. They do it. They justify their work by saying, well, we make it safer because we cut down on the likelihood of blood-borne diseases because we give them clean needles to use. These places are called exchanges, but oftentimes there's no exchange. They just give you the needles. This happens all across the state. Frankly, it happens all across the country under the harm reduction model. Harm reduction. That doesn't mean that it's safe. It just means that it's slightly safer. But all they end up doing is postpone the inevitable death while not even coming close to making a dent in the crisis, nor getting people into treatment in any meaningful way. That's the truth. They can pretend otherwise all they want, and they can wrap themselves in this cloak of heroism. We're there. We're doing the hard work. We're meeting the drug addicts where they are. No, you're not. You're helping keeping them there. You're helping to keep them there. So Como TV is reporting that the vending machines will contain boxes of Narcan, which is a nasal spray. It's completely free. Anyone can go up and take it. The purpose of the spray is to treat someone who, in the moment, is experiencing an opioid overdose.
It will allow the person to continue breathing until rescue services arrive. It doesn't flush the opioid from the body, so it's very important that you stay with the person, you call 911.
That's Paul Lukowski. He's the executive director of the Tacoma Needle Exchange. And he tells Como TV that obviously these death rates are climbing, so we got to do something about it.
The United States has experienced a huge resurgence in opioid deaths, more than 110,000 opioid deaths last year. Wow. And 3 years ago, we were around 57,000 opioid deaths.
So weird that it just exploded like that. What could possibly be behind that? Oh, yes, structural racism and the criminalization of substance abuse disorder, according to Public Health King County, Seattle. It has nothing to do with our drug legalization in Washington and Oregon and other left-wing cities that have actively said we're not going to pursue drug charges against users, which, of course, then attracts dealers to the area, dealers that are getting drugs from, oh, yes, that open southern border that we're pretending isn't open. Fentanyl is really, really easy to sneak into this country. It's exceptionally cheap to make. So drug dealers are taking advantage. The drug cartel is taking advantage. China is taking advantage. Let's go check that balloon. Maybe it's dropping fentanyl all over the place. The fact of the matter is, you've got these vending machines. It's not going to do anything. It's not going to do anything. They're supposed to be up next week. The locations will be the Recovery Cafe in Ording. Definitely where you want to put Narcan. You're recovering. But here's, just in case you fall off the wagon, here's some Narcan to help save you. It's going to be at the Moore Library in South Tacoma, which, by the way, just reminds everyone, only homeless people and drug addicts go to libraries. Can we just be honest about that? Are we still pretending that there's any value to having these places?
I think we are, but okay. Yeah, you're 100% right.
Okay, we're on to you, libraries. We know what you're there for. You're just giant drug dens at this point and homeless encampments. And then the other one is going to be at the First United Methodist Church in downtown Tacoma. No, you probably won't find God when you get there because you are high out of your mind. Now, here's a woman who's in recovery. She likes the idea.
I'm sober myself, and I think that it can be really helpful in sobriety, in trying to get sober, to have options to do that.
That doesn't get you sober, lady. It doesn't help your sobriety at all, not even a little bit. If you are using Narcan, it is because you have decided not to be sober. You can't just take Narcan when you're not experiencing a potential overdose. So this has nothing to do with your sobriety. This does not work. In fact, I would argue it makes people even more reckless when it comes to drug use because they think, ooh, I've got this magic inhaler, this nose spray that will protect me from death. So let's really have a party. Just get your Narcan ready. I'm going to take a little bit extra, but I'll be fine. Of course, that's not exactly how it works. It can help you prevent someone from dying of an overdose, but not forever. You better still get treatment immediately. Now, I like this. The machines will also have a QR code that takes people directly to training on how to use the medication to help someone experiencing an opioid overdose. Do you think that the hardcore drug addicts, the ones who will die from opioid overdoses, do you think they're going to do any of this? You think they're going to the little vending machine at the Moore Library? Let me take out my phone and scan the QR code so I know how to properly administer the Narcan. No, they're not doing anything. They're not doing anything. And the people who end up taking this stuff, who want to just hang on to it, because we've been hearing more and more and more of that advice, everyone should have Narcan on them. Yeah, well, you're just taking it away from people who you will never even see in need of Narcan. Now, just to throw in some mixed messaging, you've got the state wanting to make more money off of weed because I guess now they're saying, and it's a bipartisan bill, they're saying the higher the potency of the weed, of the products that you're buying at a legal store, the higher we're going to tax it. So they say, and this is just insane taxes, a 37% tax on products with THC concentrations of less than 35%, a 50% tax on concentrations of 35 to 59%, and a 65% tax on concentrations of 60% or more. 65% tax. That's nuts. So why exactly are we doing this? State Representative Lauren Davis, a Democrat.
The cannabis concentrates that have flooded today's marketplace are an entirely different drug than the low-potency, relatively innocuous cannabis plant that voters thought that they were legalizing 10 years ago.
Okay, and? What is your point? What's your point? That it's more addictive because it's more powerful, so you just want to make more money off of it? Or are you pretending that this is supposed to be a disincentive? Because if this is a disincentive, why don't you just go ahead and, oh, I don't know, make it illegal? You can go ahead and move forward and make high-potency weed illegal, put it to a vote. She's making the argument that people 10 years ago, when they passed drug legalization or marijuana legalization, they didn't realize that the marijuana 10 years from then would be more potent, which I find a little bit hard to believe that people didn't think that. But okay, I'll go with you. Okay, so then go ahead and make a change to the law so that you can't sell high-potency THC or high-potency weed. But the problem is here, what they're end up doing, the second that they put this into place, all you're doing is making the black market even stronger. Right now, you can get weed that is highly potent from your neighborhood drug dealer. And it is significantly cheaper, not that I know, significantly cheaper than going to a pot shop. And that's why you have so many people still purchasing weed that way, the old way, the more dangerous way. Now, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of people, a ton of people, who are buying weed legally. They're able to afford it. It's already highly taxed. Folks like Lauren Davis love it because then she uses that blood money to fund a whole bunch of different progressive projects that don't even actually work. Now, people who are against the tax, of course, are folks who work either in cannabis farms or at pot shops. They make the exact same point.
The illicit market will step right in. The stuff can be made at home and garages. There's still a very effective network to get it to the public, but where people will show up at your home to sell it to you.
So which would you like to stop? You're going to have to pick one of them. Do you want to stop the black market? Then you got to make the weed cheaper, less taxed. Or do you just want to prevent as much marijuana consumption as possible? Then you just got to make it all illegal. You got to pick a lane, though. You can't have both ways, although they're trying to. And I guess maybe it works for them still because they're still making a ton of money without making a dent in the marijuana market.
This is dumb, though. Do they tax vodka more than they tax beer? I feel like, do they really?
Yeah.
Dummy. Oh, well then. All right, fair enough. Microphone off. I thought I was making a good point, too.
I know you did.
It's a Friday.
Oh, God bless your dumb, dumb heart. You tried. You did try. Cocktails are way more expensive than beer, for example, mixed
Well, I know
drinks.
They're more expensive, but are they...
Because of taxes.
Okay.
Right now, there's a debate going on to address that, to bring the tax rate down so that it's not treated differently than beer and hard seltzer or wine.
That's what I was saying, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what you were saying. Dummy. That was funny. 1-800-465-8770. Let's all make fun of producer Max together. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rance Show. It's feeling like a Friday show. Not all Friday shows feel like Friday shows. Sometimes they feel like Monday shows, mostly because I'm in a bad mood because it's Friday, but it is every other Friday. What happens? What do I do?
You get your hair cut.
And what does it do to my mood?
Makes it terrible.
No, it doesn't.
Well, you're always in a terrible mood on Friday. That's the joke. Don't tell me that's not the bit. You come every Friday, I come in and you make a face at me that shows
that is my normal face to you.
Yeah, but
you elicit that. No, think about it. Do you elicit that face on a Monday?
Yes.
Tuesday?
Yes.
Wednesday?
Yes.
Thursday?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, fine.
Thank you. So Cairo 7 TV has a story about people who struggle to sleep. And we get the same story from multiple different either TV stations or magazines, newspaper, whatever it is. They always try to talk to you about your sleep habits, your sleep hygiene, sometimes they call that, and they try to get you in sync with your natural sort of body hormones and whatnot. And you get the same useless advice each time. And we know it's useless because no one does it, because it's not easy. They want you to think it's easy, but it's not based on how normal people live. It just isn't. They point out that the CDC says that there's over a quarter of Americans who don't get, quote unquote, sufficient amount of sleep. Now, what that means to everyone is different. What you might be able to get away with 6 hours of sleep or 7 hours of sleep. Someone else might need 9 hours of sleep. Depends on your age. It depends generally on your health. But really, it's more about your age. I'm at a point where I never get a lot of sleep, but I'm generally okay. Every once in a while, I feel a little, you know, blah. But for the most part, I'm able to get away with about 6.5-7 hours of sleep. I go to bed about 11. I wake up at about 5:30-ish or so. That works for me. But it might not work for you. But they say at some point, it's not necessarily about the hours. It's about the quality and what impacts your quality of sleep. They say when going to bed, you have to remove all light. No light can come into your room. Now, that would mean for those of you, and I don't know how many, but I'm assuming the majority have a TV in their home, in their bedroom. And if you've got like a DVD player attached to it, that little blinking light that tells you the time or whatever, that's a light that you can't have in your room. Your phone, you can't have it in your bedroom unless you turn it off so that you can't see any of the light. On top of that, of course, and again, for the vast majority of us, some of you who live in the middle of nowhere that doesn't have a lot of outdoor light outside of the moon, although even that's too much, they don't want any light to peer in from your window. So you would have to get the very dark light blocking
blackout blinds
that are super heavy for some reason. I don't know why you can't just come up with the ones that don't fall off the thing when I try to screw them up.
They have regular ones.
No, they're not good. Oh. I've tried to use that. Doesn't work either, by the way. It just, none of it ever works. Because if I'm getting, I rent, so I have to put them on top of the shades, which means I can't pull them up or down. They are always just on. It's just not fun. The other thing you can do, I guess, is wear a sleep mask. But they're so uncomfortable. I've never been able to sleep in a sleep mask. And I sleep on my back, but I still find it to be incredibly uncomfortable. But they basically say, unless you're sleeping in total pitch black darkness, like you were in a cave as a caveman, your body is not going to deliver to you the quality of sleep that you would need to feel as refreshed as possible. Great advice that no one follows. No one follows that. And stop telling me to not use my phone or any screens 45 minutes before bed. Shut up. You do that. I have a job. Don't you? What do you mean? I like to go to bed, you know, be a little bit entertained before I go to bed. Maybe just watch an episode of Veep or Curb Your Enthusiasm before I go to sleep. Why don't you leave me alone? Stop judging me. Oh, well, you're not going to get quality sleep. Okay, well, then none of us are going to get a quality sleep. At what point does humankind evolve to accept screens before bed? How much longer do we have to figure this out? Who does that? Who's the person who doesn't look at their phone 45 minutes before bed or wear those stupid yellow glasses? Who does that?
I don't think a soul does that.
No, no one does it. Even the people who sell you that garbage, they don't really do it. So what's the point of any of these stories? What's the point of them?
I don't know. Kill a couple minutes.
Seriously, no, but I'm being serious. I end up reading these stories or seeing them or hearing them, and it just gets me upset because I think to myself, I'd like to have a better quality sleep. Why can't you tell me something that's practical? I once went to a sleep doctor. You know what he told me if I wanted to get better? I was like, I'm always tired. No matter, you know, when I wake up, he goes, how long do you sleep? Oh, about 7 hours. He goes, oh, you should sleep longer. That's your advice?
That checks out to me.
Well, what time do you want me to go to bed?
6:30.
Right? This last week, I went to bed one night. It was Wednesday. It was right after the Tucker appearance. I was super tired. I went into my bed at about 8:15. I fell asleep at 9 o'clock. I went to bed at 9, and I remember saying to myself, you can't do this. It's only 9 o'clock. And then I did it. I woke up the next morning at 4 a.m. instead of 5:30. I just laid there for an hour and a half. I ended up being extremely tired on Thursday, yesterday. And then, of course, last night, I ended up doing Fox News at night, having just taught my body, you should go to bed at 9 o'clock. What time was my hit? 9:25. Then I get home. I can't fall asleep. I just lay there until midnight, and then it's all just screwy. Why can't we just have a button that we push and we just get knocked out? You know, that whole, I know it ended up killing him, but Michael Jackson had the right idea, generally. What was it called? Propofol? Whatever that drug is? Get a doctor who's qualified. Knock you out. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation, send me a text. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show.